Hello, success builders. It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. And you're tuned into the only podcast where we help you create your destiny from the ground up. More people than ever want to be happy and create freedom through winning investment strategies and a success mindset. In this show, we talk about making dreams come true through passive income, building a fun lifestyle on a foundation of freedom. If you're looking to take your life not just to the next level, but 10 levels up, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Now, let's go build your destiny. This is the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Wealth Architect Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Yeagy. So glad you're here. And we're just getting this podcast going. So I would love for you to, if you like what we're doing, go in and follow the podcast or subscribe, they used to call it. Give me a rating and review. And maybe we'll get this out to a few more people so that we can keep making it. I'm not charging you anything for this stuff, but it's my interpretation of what's going on. Hopefully you like it. I'm trying to use a common sense approach. And today we're going to talk about a common sense approach that is about the Fed. You know, it's one of my things that I like to talk about is the Fed. And I wish I didn't have to talk about them, but I think it's so obvious that we're screwed, right? And I want you to understand why we're screwed, because so many people go through their life. And, you know, believe me, that's probably a better way to go through life and not worry about the stuff that I worry about with finances and the Fed and the dollar and Bitcoin and all the stuff that keeps me up at night. You probably better off not worrying about. But if you are listening and you want to learn about this stuff, I've got a take on it that's a little bit different than some of the people that you see on the screens. And now there's some smart people on the screens, but like I always say, you get an economist on the screen from Yale and another one on the other side of the screen from Harvard, and they're going to have two totally different opinions. So at the end of the day, nobody really knows, right? So I think I have just as good an opinion as they do. And you probably do too. And some of it is like, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't have ulterior motives. And if the last couple of years have proved anything to us, is that there may be some ulterior motives on the things that our elected officials and our appointed officials have been feeding us. So my goal here is to just educate you and get you to make your own decision. And that own decision I don't want it to be political. I don't care who you vote for. I don't care where your political beliefs come down. What I care about is that you take information, and I'm not the only source, get other sources, and you start to use your brain to figure out what the information is for you and how that can affect your finances. And that's what I'm about, right? This is the Wealth Architect Podcast. It's not the Wealth Politics Podcast, right? And so we want to make sure that that's what you're doing. So today I'm going to be talking about a guy named Mark Zandi. Mark Zandi is with Moody's Analytics. Moody's is the company that right before the big crash of 2007, 2008, which caused the Great Recession, they call it, this is a company that came out and basically said, Bear Stearns is fine. These companies are all fine and gave them all great credit ratings. Now they get paid to get great credit ratings. So of course, who do they get paid by? The company they're rating, right? So there's a problem there already. And so, you know, it's not like these guys really know what they're doing. In my opinion, they got some smart people, but they're guessing. Their economics is guessing, right? It's just who guesses best. And so there's so many pieces. There's macroeconomic issues and savings issues and investment issues and debt issues and the Fed and the spending and wars and bombs, all that stuff goes in to these opinions. So get a load of what some of this guy is saying. Now, let me start by telling you that I want you to look at this chart if you're on video. If you're not, what I want you to do is just imagine that there's a piece of paper in front of you and there's a hockey stick that goes from lower left to upper right. And that's just a small, you know, increase in the debt. Okay, we're talking about the national debt in the U.S. And then all of a sudden, it just takes off and it goes straight up like a hockey stick, right? You got that in your mind? Those of you that are watching this on video, you can see that. So you can see that's the debt. The debt has gone parabolic. And we all knew it was going to go parabolic in 2008 when we printed our way out of the financial catastrophe. What we should have done, and we talked about it at the time, is we should have let all the weak companies fail. All the companies that have been taking all this extra risk and, you know, putting all of us at risk and making all of this stuff happen, where people lost their homes, where people, you know, were bankrupted. It created a lot of opportunity, but it would have done it anyway, but it would have cleaned out the phlegm, right? There was a lot of phlegm back then. Everybody was getting a loan. If you could fog a mirror, you could get a loan. And those companies that were putting the mirror in front of you were all the ones that being irresponsible. They were just making money and they were greedy. Not a single person went to jail. Not a single person was fined. Everybody got bailed out. Some companies, they token let them go out of business. But at the end of the day, all the guys that were in the group, in the club, got bailed out. And it always happens in a society where you have corruption. And I think that's what we have now. We have it in spades. And there's a lot of money sloshing around. When there's a lot of money sloshing around, then, you know, my dad always used to say, never let anybody sit next to a pile of money because they want to spend it. And that's what we do here. We create infinite amounts of money. And we have been for, you know, 100 years. And we certainly have been accelerating, hence the hockey stick, over the last couple of years. And there's waste there. That's caused inflation. I know you're feeling the inflation. So I'm setting a stage here, and I'm going to try to make this quick. The government has come out and said, inflation, everybody, is really high. It's really bad. And by the way, it's the worst in 40 years. And they say inflation is up 7.5%. Now, I say this all the time, but the last time you went and put gas in your car, even before the Ukrainian crisis, was your gas only up 7.5%? It went from $2 to $3.69 or $4 or $5 in California, and it's going higher. And now we have other issues at risk. We have Russian oil. We have constraints in oil through straits and waterways. We have all kinds of problems. We have elimination of oil exploration in the United States. We have pipelines that are shut down. We have a lot of constriction that is creating to a lower supply. And if you know anything about supply and demand, when there's a lower supply, but the demand stays the same or goes higher, you get higher prices. And that's what we're getting right now. So they can blame all the higher prices on Ukraine all they want, but higher prices have been happening since, well, for a long time, right? Just go back to 10 years ago and ask yourself how much you were paying for eggs, how much you were paying for a gallon of gas, how much you were paying for a cup of coffee, whatever it is for you. Create your own basket of goods. I can tell you my basket of goods is running about 25 to 30%, right? A martini used to cost $9, a call brand martini. Now a martini costs close to 20. That's a 50% increase. That ain't no 7.5%. I don't care what they say. Maybe you've got this basket of goods that you don't eat things that are expensive, or you're not spending any money or whatever, but I don't believe the official numbers is the point. So create your own basket of goods. Now, I think that you can use the 7.5% for the rest of this video if you want, the rest of this podcast, but the 7.5% is a bare minimum. And the Fed has a mandate to try to keep 2%. And last year in 2021, they were running around going, well, we don't think inflation's a problem. Like, you guys just printed trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. And you're so stupid to go, we don't think inflation's a problem. We think it's transitory. Transitory? Well, what is transitory? For the next 100 years, it's transitory. And now they came about a few months later and went, oops, it's not so transitory. We're going to quit using that word. We're retiring that word, they said. So they realized that they screwed up. So if you can't believe them then, why do you believe them now? Why do you ever believe them, guys? I want you to think by yourself. I want you to think for yourself. So I'm going to go back and listen to this guy. I'm going to play a few excerpts from an interview that he had on CNBC. Some smart stuff that he puts out there. God, you listen to him, you go, wow, that makes a lot of sense. But I want you to remember, the Fed has their own quote-unquote mandate to keep unemployment low and inflation at a 2% rate. Well, if inflation's at a 7.5%, if you believe that number, right, then what they're supposed to do, according to the economic theories that Paul Volcker started, is you're supposed to make money more expensive. Because if money's cheap, right, if money's cheap, everybody borrows it and they go spend it. When people spend money, prices go up, right? There's lots of money. There's lots of supply of money. Woo! You know what? What? I don't care if I pay another dollar for that cup of coffee. Yeah, I got plenty of money, right? I got a raise. You know, I got free money from the government. So when that money is sloshing around, prices go up. So what the Fed is supposed to do is make money more expensive, so it's not sloshing around anymore. The banks don't loan as much. And when they do, it's costly, right? It basically slows down the economy. When the economy slows down, there's not as much money sloshing around and prices are supposed to come down. Paul Volcker raised prices to like 20% in the 80s, early 80s, late 70s, right? Back in that period of time, we had horrible inflation, right? I remember my dad getting a mortgage at like 20% a year. It was crazy. But on the other side, you could get a 12% a year CD. You put $1 million in, you get $120,000 a year out. Those days are gone, unfortunately, for the old people. So listen to this guy as I play some of this and tell me what you think.
The Fed has to do more than it signaled if it wants to bring that inflation expectations measure down.
Well, Kelly, I think it's partly because of the higher oil prices. I mean, there's a strong relationship between inflation expectations, certainly consumer inflation expectations, but also investor inflation expectations. I think you're referring to like the five-year break-even inflation expectations. They're up. They're very highly correlated to oil prices. And if oil prices come back in, which I would expect as the Russian-Ukraine events start to wind down going forward, hopefully that'll happen.
But what if it doesn't happen, right? I mean, they didn't predict oil going up. Like, they didn't predict, they didn't see it coming. I mean, it's been coming for a long time. They weren't out there talking about this, and inflation was transitory. But what makes us think that we should believe them that oil prices are going to go down? They're going to get that exactly right.
You know, the supply side disruptions related to the pandemic start to abate, global supply chains start to perform a little bit better and inflation comes in, then that's a problem. And then I do think the Fed would step on the brakes harder because at the end of the day, they work really hard to gain the credibility they have around that 2% inflation target. They're not going to give that up easily.
I love how he says supply chains are because of the pandemic. The supply chains aren't because of the pandemic. The supply chains are because the Fed printed all that money and because they gave people money to sit at home and because there were all these little constrictions and little rules about mandates and jabs and hiring and we can't, and, you know, cards and like their supply chains because people aren't happy. And in order to make them happy, you got to pay them more. It's again, goes back to the money, goes back to inflation.
Yeah, I think he's sending a very clear, crystal clear, strong signal that, hey, look, we have a 2% target. That's where we've been. That's where we are. That's where we're going to stay. And we're going to do everything that's necessary to get us there as fast as possible. Now, you know, clearly, you've got all these things going on with the pandemic and the supply side disruptions of Russia, Ukraine, and it's going to take a bit of time to get things back down to target. But we are going back to target.
Oh, yeah. Sending a crystal clear signal. Have you heard this guy talk? He doesn't send a crystal clear signal about anything. If you ask him, do you think inflation is going to stay, you know, at 7.5%? He goes, well, maybe we might want to think about joking about making a comment about it being down. Like, he doesn't answer any single question. And here's Andy saying, oh, he's crystal clear. Come on, give me a break.
Yeah, cement down those inflation expectations because then it will make it a lot easier to actually get inflation down to the target.
You know, some are asking, Mark, what's the big deal if inflation is 3% or 3.1% or 3.2% over the next 5 years? What would you tell them?
Well, that presupposes that the Fed can calibrate things exactly right.
Calibrate, right? They haven't been able to calibrate anything, right? Certainly they can't calibrate anything exactly right. What makes us think they're going to be able to calibrate anything exactly right? This guy's given them a huge benefit of the doubt, and they've gotten everything wrong all the way up until now for the last 100 years, and certainly for the last 5 years easily.
But and if we're headed towards 3 and inflation expectations are going to 3, very unlikely that's where it all stops. I mean, we're going to blow right past that, and then we're going to be looking at 4, 5, 6, 7% inflation. We get into that kind of dreaded wage price spiral that really infected the economy back in the 70s and 80s that Paul Volcker had to wring out with very high interest rates and obviously a very, very severe recession. So, 3%, if you kind of land the plane right there and it stays there, okay, maybe that's a reasonable debate, but that's not what's going to happen. We're going to go right past that. And that's what the Fed does not want to see happen.
You know, I understand the concern about the wage price spiral, but you have to have the dry powder, so to speak, to support that, right? You know, if you don't have an expanding monetary base or an expanding, you know, you can only grow wages so much before people have to say, you know what, then we're laying off workers or we can't hire. Or or we reach this resistance point in the economy. What is the dry powder that could allow this to just keep going and building on top of itself?
Well, I mean, the economy's strong. I mean, we're growing, you know, year over year, real GDP growth is 4%. The economy's creating 500,000 jobs, you know, each and every month. Unemployment is at 4% and falling. And we've got a lot of savings out there, the so-called excess savings, the savings that was done above which would have typically happened if not for the pandemic. By my calculation, it's $2.6 trillion. That's, you know, well over 10% of GDP. Wow. That's a lot of dry powder. So this economy can roll along here, you know, pretty quickly, and we can blow, you know, right now the economy, I don't believe, is at full employment. We've got some latitude there, but we will blow past it. And if we do, then inflation will become, you know, an endemic problem, more of an issue, and the Fed will have to press on the brakes even harder.
Okay, so now I just want to put it in perspective. If the Fed is going to raise rates, now they're talking about raising 0.25% a quarter, right? So in a year, that's 1%. Like, that doesn't even make a dent in the 7.5%. And we've got inflationary stuff going on. We got supply chain issues. We've got more Russia issues. And there's a lot of assumptions like, okay, Russia's going to end and everything's going to go back to normal. No, inflation is here to stay. And it's going to hurt the poor. It doesn't hurt the wealthy. The wealthy have enough money to buy gas. The wealthy have enough money to spend, instead of spending, you know, $1.89 on a dozen eggs, they can spend $2.69 on a dollar, you know, dozen eggs. But the poor, that 69, that 89 cents makes a difference, right? It's like, it costs money. When your car goes from $2.50 a gallon to fill up to $5 to fill up to what I think is going to go to $7.50 or maybe even $10 by the end of the year, you're going to see major problems with people that can't afford those kinds of spending. So it's impossible, right? This is all a charade. Here's what they're going to do. They're going to act like they're going to raise rates. They're going to raise it 0.25 point. The market's going to freak out like it's been freaking out for the last 6 weeks, right? It's gone down. Then they're going to go, oh man, maybe we can't raise the rates, or they're going to find another excuse. You know what? Ukraine's going on. We need to print some more money so we can buy some more F-16s and send to Ukraine. We're going to need to print some more money so we can spend it on Raytheon, so Raytheon can send some of our javelins over there. Who's paying for that? We are, right? Ukraine doesn't have industry right now. They're not making anything. So we're paying for it. So your taxes will pay for it. But you know what? Easy money, easy come, easy go. Sit next to a pile of money, you want to spend it. Interesting, right? So I want you to use your own common sense when it comes to what you hear on TV, right? The inflation is 7.5% to 25%, right? Which means if you keep your money in the bank, you can buy 25% less next year than you can this year. So you can't keep your money in the bank. You can't keep your money in bonds because bonds are crashing right now and bond rates are going up. A big deal. They're going up. They give you 2% to keep your money tied up, right? 2%. So you got to put your money in stocks. You got to put your money in safe havens, because we don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of tumult in the world right now with money. So you got to put your money in gold and silver and Bitcoin and whatever else will store that value. Real estate's good too. So all I'm trying to say here is you are in control of your financial decisions, and you should know what the people are telling you and whether it's true or not. You get to make your own decision. Don't just listen to me. I'm just a bald guy on a podcast, right? Go listen to a couple other bald guys on podcasts and make your own decision. I hope that helped. You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.